Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Redemption Hill podcast. We are a community of people learning the way of Jesus to bless our city of Boise, Idaho, and beyond. Redemption Hill is a unique place. We are a collective of micro churches that do life together throughout the week and gather on Sundays to grow, worship, and celebrate what God is doing in our city. You are invited to join us Sundays at 9 a.m. at Discovery Church in Boise, where you can find the community you need in any season of your life. More details can be found at redemptionboise.org. Up next is the teaching segment from this week's Sunday gathering. Afterwards, stay tuned for more information on how to get connected at Redemption Hill.
Welcome this morning. It's good to be together. It seems like we've had a lot of great Easters in terms of weather-wise, and that works well because we have a soccer game afterwards, so it's important that we have good weather. If you would, we're going to read from Luke chapter 24, verse 13. It says, "That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them. But God kept them from recognizing him. He asked them, 'What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?' They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. And then one of them, Cleopas, replied, 'You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days.' 'What things?' Jesus asked. 'The things that happened to Jesus, that man from Nazareth,' they said. 'He was a prophet. He did powerful miracles. He was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders, they handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped that he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. And this all happened just 3 days ago. Where were you?' I added that last part. Then some women from our group of his followers were at the tomb early this morning, and they came back with this amazing report. They said that his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them that Jesus is alive. And some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, his body was gone, just as the women had said. And then Jesus said to them, 'You foolish people. You find it so hard to believe all the prophets wrote in the scriptures? Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?' And Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all the scriptures the things that concerned him. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he was going on. But they begged him, 'Stay the night with us, since it is getting late.' So he went home with them, and as they sat down to eat, he took the bread, and he blessed it, and then he broke it, and he gave it to them, and suddenly their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and at that moment, he disappeared. And they said to each other, 'Well, didn't our hearts burn within us as he was talking with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?' And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem, where they had found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with them, who said, 'The Lord has really risen. He appeared to Peter.' And they said, 'We got something even better.' And then the two from the Emmaus story told how Jesus had appeared to them as they were walking along the road and how they recognized him as he was breaking the bread." I want to start with somewhere unexpected this morning. Not at the empty tomb with the angels. I'm thankful that Alyssa was able to read that. I want to start on a road. This dusty 7 mile road from Jerusalem to a small town called Emmaus. I want to start there because it's a road that's probably pretty similar to one that most of us have traveled ourselves. It's Sunday afternoon. The crucifixion was the Friday, the 2 days before, the thing that they had given everything to. These were people who had become disciples of Jesus. These guys, they'd given everything to the movement, the teacher, the hope. All of that was nailed to a cross, and it was put into the ground, and these two disciples were walking. You got to imagine, away from Jerusalem and away from the place that everything had fallen apart. I can't imagine the disappointment these men felt. They're not running. They're not angry. They just kind of gave up. They said, well, that was a nice ride. See you guys on the other side. And then they just took a walk back home. They're not running. They're not angry. They're just walking the way that you do when the worst thing that has happened to you and your body just hasn't to get somewhere. You ever felt that? Late at night when you're hurting and you're just like, I got to go for a walk. The way you do when you've run out of words, but the silence is too heavy. And so you talk, not because talking helps, just because it's something to do. You ever been to a funeral and everybody's just chatting because it's too awkward to sit there silently? You don't have anything to talk about, but you talk just to talk. They were playing the story. The way that you replay it, the arrest, the trial, the crowd choosing Barabbas, the cross, they had front row seats to the worst weekend of their lives. But here's what I want you to notice. These guys aren't bad people. They're not weak people. They're not the people who gave up too easily. They were there till the end. These are people who had paid a real price to follow Jesus. They had left things behind. They had believed things. They had told people about him, which in first century Jerusalem was a threat to the ruling leaders of the time. And now after all that, they watched him die and they're walking away. Not because they stopped caring, but because the thing that they cared about the most seemed to be gone. It had vanished. I think most of us know this road. Maybe you walked here this morning on your way to church. Maybe you've been in it for a while, this long, slow walk away from something that you thought God was doing. Something you had believed for, something that you had bet on, something you had hoped for. This road to Emmaus, it doesn't start with doubt, it starts with grief. And then one of them says something that I think is the most honest sentence in the entire resurrection narrative. And it stops me in my track every time I read this passage. It says this. We had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. We had hoped. Past tense, hoped. It's not a small sentence. It's a eulogy for the dream that they had of Jesus restoring all things. They're not saying that they never believed. They're saying that they did believe fully, completely, everything that they had. And now this belief has a tombstone on it. We had hoped, as in we don't hope anymore. As in that chapter of hope that Jesus had written, that chapter's gone. I want to stay here for a moment because I think this is the most important place in the whole sermon, not because it's dark, but because it's honest. I think a lot of us have learned along the way that church is not a place where you say honest things. We say nice things in church. We say happy things in church. We say hopeful things in church because when we're sad, it makes other people sad, and we're not allowed to be sad because we're Americans. We're happy people. This is what we do. You're supposed to come with the right answer already. You're supposed to perform certainty in religious spaces. But these two disciples, in the presence of the risen Jesus, though they don't know it yet, they say the most vulnerable thing that they can say. They say, we had hoped. Our hope is gone. We had hoped before for something more. So what is your thing that you had hoped for? Where is the hope that has left you? The things that you used to wish and try and pray for that you've given up on. I'm not asking that rhetorically. I'm asking you to think about it right now. Maybe we had hoped that this marriage would make it. We had hoped that the drinking was behind us for good. We'd hoped that the diagnosis was going to go differently. We'd hoped that our kids would come back to faith. We had hoped that all this work that I had done would mean something. We had hoped that church would be another place, that it wouldn't be another place that just hurt us. We'd hoped that God, if there was a God, was actually something that we could hold, that we could touch, that we could feel. we had hoped. Here's what I've learned in the many years I've been walking with people in their faith journey. The death of hope is one of the most devastating things a human can experience. Not because it means that you failed, but because it means that something that was alive inside of you has died. Something that is precious, something that keeps you going, has started to dim. And that requires grief. Most places in an Easter service, you just pivot quickly and say, but death doesn't have the final say. You know, you just like make that quick pivot. But let's just like stop here. This is actual grief. We had hoped for something that was valuable and important and meaningful, and now it's gone. I'm not going to rush past it because I don't think Jesus does either. He actually sits with them in it. And while they were talking and discussing together, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. Not Jesus appeared in a flash of light and commanded their attention. Not Jesus waited for them to come back to Jerusalem and get their act together. Not Jesus sent an angel with a message. This is such a great and weird part of all the appearances of Jesus after the resurrection. It isn't light and Shekinah glory. It isn't angels and trumpets. When Jesus shows up with his disciples after the resurrection, it's not as some holy other. It's rather just a regular guy hanging out with them. He eats fish with his friends on the seashore. He lets his buddy Thomas come poke his fingers in his wounds. Always a weird story. He's just hanging out in a locked room with his friends who are scared of the authorities. Jesus doesn't show up like the Transfiguration. He shows up as one of the friends. And on the road, Jesus drew near to these two. He fell in step with them. Now, I don't want you to imagine that there was only two people on the road, and then Jesus kind of like walked up alongside of them. I want you to think this is the end of the festival. And so each day after the festival ended on Thursday. Friday was the preparation for the Sabbath. Saturday was Sabbath. And then almost everyone was walking home on Sunday. They would get on the road out of Jerusalem, heading north back to Samaria and Galilee. We're talking tens of thousands of people kind of walk. So last night I went to the AC Boise home opener, and we're walking along with thousands of people, and we're just trying to make sure our kids are kind of in our vicinity. You know, that like kind of, you're a little bit panicked, but you're also like, we'll all be fine. We're all walking the same direction. That's the vibe of the road to Emmaus. Tens of thousands of people, and then just some guy just starts walking by you and asks, what are you guys talking about? That's what was happening here, and Jesus falls in step with them. He matches their pace, which if you've ever walked with someone in grief, you know that it's slower than you expected. Like grief slows us down. And then he asks them a question. And if you know Jesus at all, that's what he does. That's his brand. He asks questions. He says, what's this conversation that you're holding with each other as you walk? And they stop and they look at him. And then one of them, Cleopas, says something almost funny. Are you the only visitor in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened in these days? Who is this guy? Has he been living under a rock? You have to imagine in the first century, like word traveled like wildfire, probably faster than the internet, because everybody had a story to tell about what they had seen in Jerusalem those days. As if Jesus is the only person in the world who doesn't know, and Jesus plays coy and goes, what things? I want to hear the inflection in his voice, because I'm sure there was a little bit of like irony, a little bit of like mirth in it. He knows exactly what things. He is the things, but he asked them anyways. Because before he tells anything, he doesn't tell them anything. He waits and he listens. He lets them talk. He lets them tell the whole story, their version from the beginning. The arrest, the trial, the hope that they had, the death of that thing, the strange reports from the women at the tomb that morning that they didn't know quite what to do with. He listens to all of it. And I think this is something to pay attention to. The risen Jesus on the first Easter Sunday spends his afternoon listening to two disciples grieving, telling him about himself. From their confused, broken, not fully understanding perspective, I think Jesus was a little curious to hear their perspective. Do you ever have that experience where someone's telling you about something that you were a part of, but you just kind of sit back and let them tell you because you want to hear what they experienced from it? Those are like precious moments. I think Jesus was like, I wonder what they felt. He was like curious what they were going through. I think Jesus just wanted to hear their experience. He enters into the story before he reveals his own. Even though he's the hero of this grand redemptive history playing out, he wants to honor their part to play in the story. And I think that this matters more than we realize, because a lot of us have been told implicitly or explicitly that God is not particularly interested in you or your version of events. That your confusion and your grief and your half-formed questions are obstacles to faith rather than the actual terrain of how faith is built. And we believe that God doesn't want to be bothered with our problems and questions and doubts, but Jesus walks towards the grief, he asks questions, and he listens, and then he opens the scriptures with them. This is the pace of God. He walks with us, and he asks questions, and he listens to our story. In chapter 24, verse 25, he says, and like this seems like a really, I wouldn't come in this hot, but Jesus does. You know, he goes, you foolish people. Like he's been listening to him for like an hour and a half. This is like a 3-hour walk. And he's like, okay, I can't do it anymore. You guys, you foolish people. You find it so hard to believe that what the prophets wrote in the scriptures hundreds of years before, wasn't it clearly predicted that the anointed one, the Messiah, would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory? This is his turn. He wants to reframe it so that they don't miss it. The suffering wasn't a detour. It wasn't plan B. It wasn't a mistake. It wasn't evidence that God wasn't paying attention. The cross was the road itself. It was the shape the story had to take. And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, can you imagine sitting with Jesus and he's just like opening up everything that they had known about their people and what God was doing, and he explains to them all the scriptures concerning himself. For 7 miles, he walks with them. 3 hours of walking, opening the whole story, creation, the fall, the covenant, the prophets, the promise, and showing them how it was all pointing somewhere. And that somewhere turned out to be a cross and an empty tomb. Here's where I want us all to stop and pay a little attention. Hope that skips suffering is not resurrection hope. Hope that ignores the pain of this world and ignores the problems that stand in our way and ignore that our hope is meaningful and purposeful and a part of who we are. If it skips over the suffering and the pain, it's not real hope, it's false hope, it's fake hope. That's just wishful thinking. That's the prosperity gospel version of Easter, where we fast forward past Good Friday to get to Sunday without letting his death mean something, letting it be valuable and purposeful. We spent Friday evening remembering together, and it was such a sweet time. Thank you, Bob and the team, for leading through that. Real resurrection hope goes through that suffering. It doesn't deny it. It doesn't explain it away. It recontextualizes it. It says this is not the end of the story. This is a part of the story, and the one telling the story has not abandoned you in it. You had hoped that Jesus would be the Messiah. You're not mistaken. It's just different than you expected. They get to Emmaus, and Jesus acts like he's going to keep going. I just love that. He's like, I'm just gonna. He's like motioning towards Galilee. It's fine. It's dark. We've all had those like, you know, Midwest goodbyes where someone's like, I should hit the road, and it's like 10 o'clock, and you're like, you really should stay the night. You know, like they're begging for an invite. That's what Jesus is doing here. He's begging to be invited into his home. He doesn't force himself in. He doesn't say, look, I'm the risen Lord. Let me in your house. He just walks as if he's going to continue on and lets them take the initiative. And they urge him and they say, stay with us. It's toward evening and the day is spent. I love this moment. They still don't know who he is, but something happened in them over these 7 miles. Something was kindled and they don't want it to stop. They had heard something that changed them. They don't have the right theology yet. They don't have the full picture. They don't know whoever this stranger is, that they need him to stay. And this is what a seeking heart looks like. It's not certainty. It's not a fully formed belief system. You're not sure that it's all true or right. It's just a pull towards something that you can't quite name yet. And the courage to say, don't go yet. Let's keep talking. If you're here this morning and you're not sure what you believe, if you walked in on your Emmaus Road and you're replaying your own version of We Had Hoped, you look back on your disappointment with church and your disappointment with family and your disappointment with all the hopes that you had had in your life, this moment's for you. You don't have to have it figured out. You just have to be willing to say, stay with me a little longer. Let's search together. So he goes into the house, and they sit down to eat. In verse 30, it says, as they sat down to eat, he took the bread and blessed it. And then he broke it, and he gave it to them. And suddenly their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And at that moment, he disappeared. And this is like, this happens throughout the gospel recountings of Jesus' resurrection appearances, that there's something that blinds people to him, where they know it's him, but they're like, it's something different about him. So, you know, like when you watch superhero movies and they put the glasses on, you're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that was Superman. You know, it's just that blindness that falls over you. It's kind of like that with Jesus in these stories, where there's something about him that they're drawn to and they understand, but there's something different about him. And then they have these moments where they recognize him. Everything shows up. Not during the walk, not during these 7 miles of walking through the story in Scripture, not when he was making the theological argument for why he was what they were hoping for. Their eyes were opened at the table in the breaking of bread. This is important because it's at the table where we enjoy intimacy and fellowship and belonging with God and his people. And then he vanished. And they look at each other, and this is my favorite verse in the whole passage. It says, they said to each other, didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us? They felt it the whole time. They just didn't know what they were feeling. This is one of the strangest and I think most important things about the resurrection. It doesn't always announce itself with trumpets. Sometimes it shows up as like this yearning you can't explain, a pull you don't have words for, a conversation that cracks something open in you and you're not sure why yet. And you look back later and you say, he was there the whole time. I've talked to so many people here in Boise who wouldn't call themselves Jesus people. People who think church is either irrelevant or harmful or both. But they all, when you start talking about what they had hoped for, they will tell you the yearning in their souls for something more. When you sit down with people and you hear their stories, you hear that there's something in them that's aching, a sense in some ordinary moment that something was more alive than they expected, a conversation that left them strangely unsettled in that good kind of way. What if this yearning, this burning in their hearts has a name? What if the thing that you've been feeling maybe for years is this risen Jesus walking among us? And one day, in a moment, the lights are going to flip on and you're going to say, oh, it was Jesus all along. Here's the thing about Cleopas and his companion. Their hope didn't die when it was reshaped into a hope for something better. It got transformed. They had hoped for a political redeemer, a Messiah who would overthrow Rome and restore Israel to power. That was their framework. That was how they thought about it. That was the hope that they had built their whole understanding around. They were hoping to get a sweet spot in the new administration. They had worked on the campaign, and they were hoping that someday they might get that assistant secretary of, you know, agriculture or whatever it is. That hope died on Friday. Jesus wasn't going to be that kind of savior, the one who made his power known through the political systems of this world. But what rose on Sunday was something so much larger than what they had hoped for, not a Jewish redeemer, not a nationalist redeemer, a cosmic one. Not freedom from Roman oppression, but freedom from the reign of death over creation. Not a restored nation, but a remaking of all things into what they were meant to be. Their hope wasn't wrong, it was just way too small. And I think this is true for most of us. The specific things that we hope for, that marriage that would save us, the career that would fulfill us, the community that would finally see us, the sobriety that would finally stick, those hopes aren't wrong, they're just echoes of something much bigger and real. They're pointing to something true and big and cosmic. This resurrection is saying the thing that you're actually hungry for is bigger and better than the specific thing that you thought would satisfy it. Well, you want meaningful work? Resurrection says that your work participates in God's renewal of all things. When you do your work well, the world itself is transformed. That what you do with your hands and your minds and your gift is not meaningless. It's not just for you. It's part of the restoration of things that are broken. Well, you want to be free? Resurrection says that the same power that pulled Jesus out of the grave is available to you, not someday in the future, not just in theory, but right now, in your actual life, in your actual addiction, in your actual shame, that resurrection power is available. Just this last year, I've seen a handful of you here in the room and outside of the room shake loose the chains, the bonds of long-term addiction. And everyone around you was transformed by you being changed. Several in this room will tell you, if you ask them, God makes people new. Well, you want to be known? Resurrection says that you were made to share a table with a village, not live in isolation. That there is this community of friends where we learn the way of Jesus together, that there's a place that has your name on it, and the Father himself sees you. And what we keep seeing in real community is that these deep relationships committed to one another have the power to change us in ways that are immeasurable. You want your body to be whole? Well, resurrection says that the physical world matters to God. He doesn't ignore it. He cares about it. Easter is not about escaping your body into some spiritual realm. It's about the redemption of the body, the healing of the physical, the restoration of what's broken. I've been having some physical problems lately. And I can tell you, I ache and I yearn for this in ways that I didn't know was possible. I yearn for this body to work the way it ought to because it hurts when it doesn't do what it's meant to do. You want the world to be better? Well, resurrection says the kingdom is not just a metaphor. It's not a distant hope for after you die. It's breaking in right now. Whatever beauty is made, wherever justice is done, wherever the poor is cared for and the captive are set free and the sick are tended to, the kingdom is coming in power right now and it's changing our lives. That's what's available, not just the small little things that we had hoped for, like a nice job and a spouse who doesn't despise us, you know, very, very low bar hopes. The larger version of what you have hoped for is that God would set all things the way that they were meant to be. And the story ends with these two disciples doing something remarkable. They get up immediately. It's evening. Luke tells us that the day is far spent. It's late. They had just walked 7 miles. And they turn around and they walk back to Jerusalem. My bet is it was probably double time. 7 miles at night. Because you cannot keep this kind of hope to yourself. They were so compelled by this experience with Jesus on the road that they ran back to the disciples so that everyone that they knew heard what they had seen and what they had experienced. When hope is not just resuscitated, but it's transformed into what it's meant to be, when you encounter the risen Jesus, not as a historical figure, but as a living presence on your actual road, in your actual life, something moves in you. Not an obligation, not a religious duty, something alive inside of you. This is what I've seen over and over. As God makes sense intellectually to some of us, as much as creation points you towards something larger, as much as community helps you learn the way of Jesus, it takes a personal encounter with Jesus, meeting you actually where you are on this Emmaus Road. And we've watched it happen here. And I want to have one of our friends, we made a video sharing his story of what happened here on an Easter Sunday just like this one. Last year on Easter, he came up to Jesse Horney, and there's a lot of Jessies around here, so we have to be really careful. So Jesse Dexter said to Jesse Horney, I'm not going to tell Jesus because I don't even know if I believe in him, but I'm going to tell you what I want. I want my wife back. And so Jesse and I started praying, and we told a few people we love and told them to start praying. And then miraculously, God started to shift both Jesse and Bree in a way that is inexplicable. That's what happens, is that Jesus meets you along the road. Things start to yearn again. You start to hope again. You start looking for something more. When I was 19, my life was falling apart in quiet ways that are hard to explain. Lonely and afraid, unsure of who I was and where I was going. A mentor showed up, and he met me there. He didn't fix it. He didn't hand me theology. He loved me with the kind of love that made God feel near. And something in me recognized it. I've never been the same. A friend of mine in this room, he didn't grow up with faith or church or anything like that. Faith wasn't a part of his world, but in college, after months of wrestling with Jesus and who he actually was, he had a moment on the floor of his dorm room where something broke open. He'd call it a Jesus moment. And that's exactly what it was. Everything changed. A woman I know had to make one of those decisions that feels like it determines everything. Was she going to take a job in another city or stay here? And she went for a long walk, expecting on this long walk to figure out what that answer is going to be between these two options. What she found instead was that it wasn't the job and it wasn't staying, but it was something else entirely. She found Jesus in that walk, and it reoriented everything in her life. Three different roads, three different people. The same thing happened to each of them. The risen Jesus drew near and they recognized him. And that's what happened with these two men. They go back to find the 11 and they tell them, he is risen. He's actually risen. We were on the road with him. We knew him in the breaking of the bread. You see, the tomb is empty. He's not there. He's on the road with you right now this morning. And here's the question I want to leave you with. It's not a conclusion, but an invitation to carry with you. What if the hope that you thought was dead isn't dead after all? What if that hope you had was something precious, but it was meant for something much, much more? What if Jesus has been walking alongside of you the whole time, and today's the day where the light switch flips and you see that he's been there with you? What if that burning, that yearning you felt, the pull towards something more, the sense that your life was made for something larger, that longing that nothing can quite satisfy, what if that yearning has always been him? He is risen and he's still drawing near. I'm going to invite the band to come back up because I'm finishing up and that's what we do when we at the end of sermons. That's the invitation of Easter morning. It's not a belief system to adopt. It's not a religious commitment to make. It's just this. When you feel that yearning, say, Jesus, would you stay with me? Would you stay and have a meal with me? He is risen. He's on your road. He's not in a hurry. And actually, we're going to spend the next 4 weeks together. We're going to ask the question, what does resurrection life look like in your work, in freedom, in your wounds, in your ordinary Mondays? Because Easter's not a day that we just celebrate. It's a reality. It's an inbreaking of this new world that's available to us right now. But today we're going to end with prayer and this invitation. Come back to the table. Join us there with Jesus. The same table where the eyes were open, the same broken bread, the same invitation. You don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to know where the story is going to lead. All you got to do is stop and say, let's have a meal together, Jesus, and let's figure this out. Would you pray with me? Lord Jesus, I The resurrection is really good news. And it's good news because it answers the questions I don't even know to ask. Like, where can I find real, overwhelming, abundant kind of life that I'm hoping for that I'm not even willing to say? It answers the question, where do I find freedom? It answers the question, where do I find relationship? It answers the question, where can I be made whole? And so, Lord, we pray this morning that each of us would not ignore those moments where we feel that yearning, where we sense that burning in our hearts because you're there with us, and that we linger in those places and say, Jesus, what do you have to say? Tell me about your story, Jesus. Tell me about what it means for me. And show me the hope that I've been longing for, that I've been yearning for, and how it's fulfilled in you. In your name we pray. Amen.
Thanks again for listening. Make sure to subscribe to get the weekly episodes in your podcast feed. You can find out more on how to get connected with Redemption Hill at redemptionboise.org/connection, where you can fill out the Connect card and start your journey today. For regular encouragement throughout the week, follow us on Instagram at Redemption Boise. We are so glad you're here and are excited to accompany you in your story with God. We hope to see you soon.